So, Phil's getting his engagement photos this weekend.
Oh, he loves photos.
Yep.
You love photos.
I do.
You love
people. He hates them.
So much that I never take any of my own.
He never smiles in any of the ones we have.
Whenever there's a group picture, I'm like, I'll take it. I'll just take the picture.
He's always in a bad mood when it's a picture day.
Always has that about to press the murder button look.
Yeah.
You get about 5 minutes, and then everything is a fake smile after that. Yeah. I can't do it. I don't enjoy the process.
Yeah, if you want to call in any wedding advice for Phil, angry Phil, call in, and we'll put you in the running for Foreigner tickets. Coming to the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater a week from today. They're playing all the hits, by the way.
Yes.
All the good stuff. Have a lot of them.
Lots.
All right, 1-877-764-2535. It could be the dumbest advice, but just call-in advice. And he won't be able to hear it because he'll be taking your call and writing down your phone number.
Amanda last night. I was like, just tell me what you want me to wear. Like, I'm not going to go through this whole thing, like, picking a whole bunch of stuff
out. Like, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Just tell me what it is that you want.
Well, what are you guys doing? Like, are you going to be, like, walking through a field, like, standing next to a fence?
Oh, right.
Are you going to be walking on
the
water?
What
do
we know?
Like,
do we know? Is there a setting?
There is a very specific setting.
Okay.
This was supposed to be where the proposal was going to happen. It couldn't happen. So we're going to be at her family's beach house in Old Lyme.
Oh, beach house.
Oh, another water thing, huh?
Yes, another water thing.
Oh. Mm, beach house. Beach
How about something more interactive, like you're picking up dog poop or something?
I don't know if I like that for an engagement photo shoot, but I like the thinking outside the box.
It shows you're thinking. You're doing things together.
Ah, here we are at the beach house. All right, let's take the picture. Where's the groom?
What the hell do you want? Take a friggin' picture! Take a shot! Take a shot!
You think you could just smile a little for the picture?
Take a shot!
Brides and grooms definitely look at this differently.
What if a seagull poops
it's
on
stupid.
You?
Stupid.
No.
What if a seagull poops on you?
God.
Right on you. It's been good luck for the wedding. No, it's not.
This is proof that this whole fake life thing started way before Instagram.
True.
You know, let me post a picture of me happy. How about posting a picture of you pissed?
Right.
Let's see that.
How we normally see you.
How about a picture of you right after you got bad news?
Yep.
Okay, take a picture of you at a funeral. Like, none of that's on Instagram.
Of course not,
no. Engagement picture. Oh, this is like, I was at Disney World with young Chez, right? We wanted to take a picture with Mickey. We're standing in line. Parents are cutting, pushing each other out of the way, screaming at each other, crying. They finally get with Mickey. It's like, okay, look at the camera, smile. They all smile,
right,
click,
right,
and then back to fighting.
Exactly.
I'm like, this is...
like a pause button.
Yeah.
It's so okay. Fake.
It's yeah. The mouse.
It's all fake.
Yep.
The engagement picture, fake. Fake.
Yeah. Show like how you really are.
Look at us. We're so happy.
Dress frumpy. There's
yeah,
like,
okay. Why don't you ask the groom if he's happy? You're happy.
She was trying to bribe me last night. She's like, what if we do something fun? I'm like, I don't want to do fun stuff. I just want to get it over with.
Fun stuff like what?
You guys playing video games.
She like
was,
what?
I was like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm not doing any of this Pinterest stuff for
What's
like
fun?
We're popping champagne and like all like
oh,
there's
that's fun.
No, there's all these stupid trends now. Like I don't want to be in these trends. Like, let's just take pictures. So, like, she's not going to wear a white dress. She's going to wear something with color. So I get to wear something
Why would
that's
you
a
wear
little
white?
Bit more fun.
Because you're a bride.
Oh, Jesus.
Exactly.
Trust me.
That, oh, that's so you wear, you're wearing white every day until you get married?
Right,
are you
right.
A virgin?
It
What's
shows
that
purity,
all about?
Yeah.
Every wedding event. So the engagement photos, the rehearsal dinner, like, you wear white because you're a bride.
And boom.
I wore a very long white dress.
And scene.
That's what you do. That's Chess. What you do.
Yeah, trust me. That ship left a long time ago.
Hold on. Let's take one call.
Should be black.
Back to this skirmish. Chris.
Good morning, guys. How
hey,
you doing?
You?
Good. It's Chris of Chris and Roy's Brotherly Grove.
Oh, Chris.
There you go.
Yes, sir. Good morning, guys and
morning.
Girls.
Outside of sandwiches?
Hello. Okay.
So I've been married almost 16 years.
Congratulations.
And the best advice I can give is the advice a very wise man gave me. Hang the picture where she wants it. Mm-hmm. my father-in-law told me that on my wedding day.
Is that a metaphor?
Oh, the father-in-law told you.
Hang the picture where she wants it.
Like he's handing her off like a car.
Right.
Like, you know, make sure that radiator's full because it overheats easy.
Exactly. And you know what? The pictures are where she wants them, and we're going 16 years.
She gets a little testy around 60.
Hang the picture where she wants. Is that where I'm going wrong?
You don't have any pictures.
You know, I called him recently and said, what do we do when we run out of pictures?
You take more.
You buy a new house.
All right, that's good advice.
Exactly.
All right, we'll put you in the running for the tickets. Thank you, brother. Yeah, boy, my wife's texting me now.
Uh-oh. He's in bold caps.
Do funny, weird photos.
Yeah.
Funny, weird photos. There you go.
Just, how about this? You just take a picture, okay? This is me. This is you. Let's look at the camera and we'll smile. How? Why? Why does it have to be this dog and pony show?
Like candid photos are fun.
What?
Smiling.
Yeah, candid
laughing.
Guess what a candid photo is? Look it up. Look up candid photo.
Means you're not posing.
No. No posing.
It means just taking a
photo. By the way, I don't know why I'm so mad about this. I really don't understand it.
There's a lot of pointing.
Whatever. Oh, I'm going nuts. I'm going nuts. And I don't care. No, my wedding was last year. We're done. Nice and simple. I don't know why I'm so mad.
I poured a big whiskey last night. I sat down. I looked at Amanda, and I said, there's one thing that I have to ask you. And she goes, okay. I said, for this engagement photo shoot, it cannot go 3 hours. And she goes, oh, who would do that?
Hello.
Only one nutbag would do that.
3 hours.
A fun. 3 hours of fun.
Yeah, after 2 hours, you get pushed right in the water. Bloop.
I did go in the water. It was magnificent.
Can we see some of these? Was anyone taking pictures with a cell phone?
Why is your hand up?
Yeah, how many pictures from the third hour are going to be considered?
I don't have them yet.
There's no way.
That's what we want to see. We want to see the slideshow from minute one to minute 180.
As humanity begins to...
All right. In 20-minute intervals. Hello. Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. Hey, it's Boston John. How you guys doing?
Hey, Boston John. Yo. Advice for Phil, and then we put you in the running for foreigner tickets.
All right, so Phil should just get a cardboard cutout of himself, and then he doesn't even have to be there.
This is true.
And they can put him anywhere.
First of all, Phil, this is uniquely you for a funny engagement photo. If we could do a cutout of you.
Here's the thing about the cutout.
I still have
to take the picture.
Yeah, it's only one photo.
There still has to be a photo
It's
shoot.
Only one photo, though.
That is the funniest engagement picture ever.
If you didn't pop my clown,
it's so perfect.
If you didn't pop my clown, we had the Phil Punchy clown. We could
use
that.
Pop it.
Someone did.
Yeah. You were the only one punching it.
Okay.
Well, if no cardboard cutout, then just drink a hell
it's
of a lot.
All about AJ.
Yes, it is.
All right, John, we have your number, right? Okay. You're in the running. We're trying to help Phil. Can you hear that?
No.
Phil's getting his engagement photos done this weekend.
That's what Amanda thinks.
He hates having his picture taken.
It gives me such anxiety.
Trying to give him advice. And everybody on gets in the running for foreigner tickets 1 week from tonight at the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater in Bridgeport. Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Hey.
So what if you did something more manly, like axe throwing or archery or...
This is what makes me, I think, there's layers of anger when I get mad about this.
Okay.
And one of the layers is it's all about the woman. There's nothing. There's no sign of the man in these pictures at all.
There should be half and half.
There's no sign of what he likes to do.
Yep.
Was there Eric holding his MMA belt?
No.
Was there Eric holding a saw or something? He's a project manager, a construction. No. Nothing.
Was there Eric running for his life?
Phil doesn't like archery. He doesn't even go outside. He plays video games.
Okay.
I like archery.
Is there any idea of or a thought? Has there been any discussion of Phil sitting on a chair playing video games?
No, because that doesn't matter.
Or about to shoot an apple
exactly
off Amanda's
my
head.
Point. It doesn't matter what he wants.
No.
Nope.
All right, Michelle, you're in the running. We got your number?
We do.
Okay, thank you.
All he has to do is like look into Amanda's eyes and be like, "Ooh, Amanda, your hair is so blonde and sunshiny, and I love you."
Does that ever happen?
And worry, just don't even worry about the camera. Forget
drunk,
it's there.
When he's drunk, maybe you know.
Those are called private moments.
Yeah.
And then now you want a picture of it.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Photographic evidence. He once loved me.
Yeah.
Right. Remember that one time? That one time
he once cared enough to be humiliated in front of a photographer.
I got three things working in my favor
emasculated.
For this. Other than like what we do here, photo shoots that we do here at the station, I'm going to have Amanda there. That is going to be a big help. She is enormously patient. I don't know how she deals with me. That is definitely going to help.
We're wondering too, but
being in a place where I'm already comfortable is going to help. Like when we just do like, oh, I'm going to pull the white backdrop down. We're going to shine 18 lights in your face. Right. That is part of why I hate doing the photo shoots here.
We should do that again.
It's like being out on the beach. That will help a little bit. And the third thing is, I could just leave. Like, I'm paying you. Like, I could just walk away whatever I want. There's no obligation. You get 10 shots. We're picking the best one for those.
I told the photographer at my first wedding, you're to capture the moment.
Right.
We don't want to really...
No posy stuff.
We don't want you in the way.
Right, just...
And we shouldn't even really see you. You know?
No.
We have to, fine, but... And can you silence that friggin' click, 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 click?
Oh, yeah. Paparazzi.
I think one of the reasons why I get so annoyed with this is weddings began as two people standing before God and a few friends promising to do the right thing, followed by a picnic. And now it's become this economic tsunami.
Multi-million-dollar business.
It's like what colleges do to kids. They just... riddle them with death and debt and debt.
And frat parties.
Hold on, hold on.
Nice.
Yeah, write it down. Me, 638.57.
Off to a good start.
At least you owned it.
Fun pictures like you on the crapper.
That's not fun. You can't hang that anywhere.
Sure you can.
So we were talking last. Amanda did also pitch something that she thought would be fun.
Okay.
So on our first date, we had a very specific whiskey that we shared. Hmm. She's like, what if we get a bottle of that whiskey? And I was like, and we drink all of it before the picture. She's like, no. But we have that, it
no, that's
in
a great
the photo
idea.
Shoot.
All drunk.
And at the end, like, we can, like, be, you know, we have some in the glass and we cheers. I'm like, all right, how long? How many locations? How long? Where are we going? Like, is this, are we getting in the car, driving place one, place two?
How does the whole life become about what she wants? We're already told, hang the picture where she wants. Okay, but do I have to do everything that she wants?
Guys don't care about this stuff, though. Like, they don't care. They just want to show up at the wedding. Like, you plan the whole thing. Just tell me where to be.
No.
Tell me what time
no,
to be
they
there.
Don't. You know what? They'd actually like to participate, but they know what that means. It just means
hell.
Aggravation.
Hell.
Like, but... when did it become, oh, it's her day? Really?
I thought it was their day.
Because I'm here, too, and I'm signing up the rest of my life.
It's their day, yes. It's their
her
day.
Special day. She's dreamed about that. Well, good. Good. Any part of that dream include the guy?
That was a nightmare part.
So how much of your wedding did you plan, Chaz?
The whole thing.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
The second one. Both, because I'm a planner.
Yes, you are.
You know... I don't know why I'm so angry. I really, don't. No. I really don't care about this at all.
Yeah,
you know.
Right.
Do that finger meditation thing. That'll help.
What is it?
You take your thumb and you touch each one of your other four fingers and just start over again.
Just use one finger.
Just focus on your finger. Just
I thought that was like an ADD tick.
One
no,
finger
just
works.
Just focus on your finger.
Just flip the bird to everybody. You're good.
Hmm. Okay.
Does that help?
The one
finger. Does help.
Oh, good.
Oh, look at that.
I like AJ's method. You use less fingers.
Yeah, just give one finger out. Up yours, people.
I, like I just I don't know how I'm going to drive like this. Because that's where I really go nuts.
Use your knees.
Jeff on the road. Hey, Jeff.
Yay, good morning. Hey, Phil, yay. Listen.
Yes.
Everybody, every time the bride picks out your outfit, just wear whatever the hell you want. I had to wear the most ridiculous outfit. I hate those pictures.
Ah! What did you have to wear?
Clown suit.
I had to wear this, like, she put me in this, like, dark brown leather shirt, with
what?
Like matching brown jeans. I looked like a turd sitting on a freaking bench in a park in Providence.
I'm a turd from UPS.
Every time I look at the pictures every morning when I go down to the bottom of the stairs. I look at it, I just shake my head. I hate it.
Dark brown leather shirt.
I think it's the woman's. I think they all get together and say, Look how I trained mine. Look at what I got mine to do.
I trained mine to do this. That shirt was so hot, he got a skin rash.
Really? I got mine to dress like a duty. Wow, that's pretty good. Okay. Right. That beats me with the onesie pajamas. Okay, good.
Notice the matching brown hat.
onesie pajamas. We got to do that again. Great idea.
God.
So I'm buying whiskey today.
Yeah, yes, good.
M run.
All this for sex. That's really. And then that's not even guaranteed. That goes away.
You just buy a Harley. That's cool.
There's got to be an easier way.
Jazz and AJ, Premier Auto Group News.
99.1 PR, 95.9 The Fox. The only weather guy who got it right. This is, listen to this. It's a recording from Friday morning on WICC when most everyone was saying doom and gloom, smashing Connecticut, cats right. and dogs living together.
Duck.
It's going to be horrible. This is what this guy was saying.
Sunday, on repassing by to our east, it'll be breezy with occasional showers and thunderstorms or rain, heavy at times, 75 to 80.
Boy.
Sounds pleasant.
That was right on the money.
Yes, it was.
Bill Jackerman, he's a meteorologist at the Connecticut Weather Center located in Danbury on the show. How'd you do that?
How'd
you get it right?
Yeah.
I didn't buy a lottery ticket that day. That was my mistake.
Damn it.
Yeah. We get it right sometimes. We don't get it right sometimes. But I've always said in all the decades of doing weather that if you believe the computer models all the time, you're going to be more wrong than right. That's, because meteorology is an art. I'm not sure how much you guys have an interest in weather, but if you do, you realize that we kind of are at the whim of Mother Nature all the time. So it's kind of a learning curve, what Mother Nature does, what happens here in the Northeast, things that are possible and are not possible to happen. So the computer models were doing something that didn't really seem possible to happen. And
why?
You just take
what did you see and say that's not going to happen? Was it that pressure system pushing it as far? So they were saying this weather pressure system is going to push it into Connecticut. You didn't see
right.
that?
No, because when you're looking at the pressure difference of what the storm was actually doing, and that's the most important thing. When I ever had meteorologists come into the Connecticut Weather Center, they say, you can leave the books behind. You have to kind of look at the computer model, say which one's doing the best job, recently, and then use that model. And what was happening is that the storm was not turning. It wasn't doing what the models were saying it was going to do to push this storm that far west. And every model, it was going further. It started at Cape Cod, and it ended up being almost coming ashore in Bridgeport. And that was just kind of ridiculous. It was too far to the west. So you just kind of take the media of the road of how it's going to move till that we knew it was going to move west, but just not a sharp west until after it got inland because of this big upper level low. And I don't want to do a lot of meteorology with you guys, but there's a huge upper level low that was in New York State, and it actually ripped all the moisture from Henri into the system, and so it basically disabled it as it came in and pulled it west northwest. But it was after it made landfall. It wasn't going to be before that.
Mike Madden, a friend of mine, was telling me they put is it Jim Cantore or Jim Cantori with the Weather Channel?
I think it's Cantore.
Yes.
The guy they put always in the eye of the hurricane.
Yep.
They put him in Rhode Island. Right? So they knew
that's where it was going
where it was coming, and you knew what was going to happen.
Right. Yeah, you look at where the weather guys are and they stand there. And I've done that when I worked at Fox 61. They put us out in the middle of where you're not supposed to be, and then we say, don't do this.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of it. But that's what Jim does, too. You'll stand here and say, okay, don't do this, but oh, boy, here it comes. And
there's something about that you think that at any moment a metal garbage can can fly into the scene and knock the guy out.
Or a road sign.
And it just makes it interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People love seeing that. So, yeah, but it's wasn't so bad as for Connecticut, thank goodness. But the irony was for most of the day, or for most of the state, especially west of the Connecticut River, yesterday was more rain and wind than what happened when Henri made landfall.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday sucked.
So, yeah. No, the wind, the rain, it was just like, well, what's going on now? Is this Henri? And it technically wasn't. It was just the leftover moisture just used by the upper level low, and it wasn't rolling through. So not the best day yesterday. A lot of places got 1 to 2 inches of rain, which is more, except southeastern Connecticut, of course, than the rest of Connecticut for yesterday.
So you got it right, and you're saying it's a little bit of luck and a little bit of just reading what was happening?
Well, I've done this for decades, so I think after
no, but everyone
a while,
who was predicting it on television, 90% of them have been doing it for decades.
They were saying Armageddon.
Now,
yeah, I think people, it is tough to want to not go to, and I want to say this, because I've been in radio and TV for a long time, but we know ratings are very important. You guys know, right? If you guys didn't have the ratings, what would happen? So on TV, because of all the graphics and the dramatic things that they can show, it kind of instills a little more fear and angst in people, so they watch it.
Yeah.
Similar to putting Jim Cantore on the Shoreline. You know, it's the same type of thing. I've always just been, and I'll be honest with you, I've just been a person who just wants to protect people, give you the what is happening, and not do a lot of dramatic stuff. Here's what's happening, here's what you need to do, and that is it, because weather can kill you. Weather's dangerous, and if you cry wolf too much, no one's going to listen to you anymore.
But
and
the
that's
models,
not what the job's about.
But the models were saying that's what's going to happen. Now, you went
they
off
were.
Of that,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think that was just intuitive, if I can say.
So it's not like these people programmed the models to do that so they can create hysteria. It's the models were doing that. What did the models, how do you not program them to see what you saw?
Well, there's more than one or two models. There's literally dozens of them out there from different countries. Different countries have many different weather models. Some are hurricane-based. Some are just non-tropical-based. And so you have so much to choose from, almost too much,
but
in
did
my
you
view.
See, like, I don't know if you watch any of the television just to see what they're doing, but just about everyone that I saw had, if there were 15 strings, like 11 of them were coming right over Connecticut.
Oh, yeah.
Like a parade.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, one model will follow another, and they all have that same, you know, if they're going to make an error, they're going to do, a lot of them will jump on the same bandwagon. They're using the same data, so it kind of makes the same error. But again, it was just a feeling, guys, that I'm looking at the stuff going, this doesn't even look right, or it wouldn't even sound right that it's going to be coming on shore, let's say toward Bridgeport. It had to be a lot further east. It just wasn't going to make that sharp of a turn until it came inland, when it slowed down enough. Again, forward speed is a huge thing in tropics, and I'll give you kind of a rule of thumb you guys can use, and that is if a storm, a tropical system, is moving literally 14, 15 miles an hour or greater, it's not turning. It's just not going to happen. It's got to slow down to under 10 miles an hour, and then it begins to turn. The predictions of these models were that this thing was coming up and, you know, making a turn. It just doesn't do that in nature. So
wow.
I just didn't feel comfortable with that until knowing. And look what happened once it made landfall. It started to move literally northwest toward the northwest corner of Connecticut once it slowed down.
Now, if it went right over Long Island, wouldn't that have slowed it down? Because I saw some of the forecasts said, you know, it was still going to hit us at around 70 miles an hour. And I thought if it went right over Long Island, that would the land would slow it down.
Yeah, lose some speed.
You know, yeah, the wind speed will slow down as soon as it makes landfall, because it cuts off the source of energy, which is the moisture in the oceans. It has to be 80 degrees or more, and once you shut that off, it's like turning a gas stove off on boiling water. It'll still be hot, but it's not going to be boiling as much. That exactly happens when this goes over land. So, yes, if it went over, like Gloria, you remember back years ago, that went over Long Island, then came into southwest Connecticut, and it fell apart very, very quickly. So, yes, once they make landfall, then it would knock it apart, unless it's moving very fast. The 1938 hurricane was just careening up the coast and, you know, slammed into eastern New England. Well, not only was that devastating because it maintained its strength, it couldn't weaken, but its forward speed was also added to the wind. So that was just a horrific situation. So sometimes fast-moving hurricanes will maintain their strength, but in this case, Henri had a very tough time even becoming a hurricane because there's a lot of wind shear. A lot of wind was just in the upper levels were just ruining it. Became a hurricane, but then downgraded itself to just a strong tropical storm before making landfall in Rhode Island. But
well, even NOAA or whatever that's called, the National Hurricane, whatever.
Oceanic. Yep. Something
like that. Yeah. NOAA. They had it wrong, too.
Yep.
I mean, you had it right. That's, good for you.
Well,
you get a gold star on your paper.
Yeah.
Big time.
Bill Jackman, like meteorologist on, he does weather for our sister station, WICC, and he got into doing weather when his parents asked him to keep an eye on the weather because they're going on vacation.
Nice.
How old were you, like 12?
11 or 12, and I had to stay out of the way. So they said, just watch TV, Bill, and to find out what the weather is in Maryland. I said, oh, okay. Well, they created a monster at that point, yeah.
They programmed
you. I liked it from that point on.
And then you were hit by lightning once?
Yeah, actually, the day before I started college at Western Connecticut State, the morning before, I always had a weather station when I was a kid, and
Can I tell you, before you go into this, Bill,
Sure. Every
superhero starts out with some kind of thing, like radioactive spider, hit by lightning, energized.
Right.
He's
mm-hmm.
a superhero weather guy
exactly. By
being struck by lightning.
Lightning man.
And he got his superpowers of being able to tell the weather.
Super meteorologist.
Going to call you lightning rod.
Sorry. Okay.
But the listeners can know that Chaz and AJ will not be standing by me in a thunderstorm anymore, right?
Because that's right.
That's bad, right?
Yeah. Okay. We'll be inside.
I won't
recording.
Yeah. No, basically, it was just a quick. I was resetting a rain gauge. It was like 1 a.m. Storm was gone, and I was up just watching it. And lightning from the back part of the storm came out and came, through the window as it can, and. It hit me, but it was just the my left side, or I should say my right side of my hand, and went through the right side of me. It threw me across the room. But my mom, which is very funny, the thunder was so loud. When the lightning is close to you, thunder is very loud. And sometimes when you get hit, in this case, when I was hit, you don't hear the thunder. I mean, it knocks you kind of out for a little bit and kind of tosses you around. But that was a great headline they liked in the local paper.
What did your hair look like?
I'm picturing him like Rick Moranis at the end of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and like all smoking,
smoldering.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not where the curly hair came from, but that's just, it's it wasn't so that it was on fire, which was a good thing.
Did it leave a mark?
It wasn't a cartoon character or anything, yeah.
Did it leave a mark?
Laser blast?
Can you show?
No. It was almost like how you pull your muscles when you like with an arm, you lift something too much and you feel your muscles are strained. That's what I felt the next day, basically, which I was pretty fortunate. It wasn't a direct hit. It was one of the little leaders that came off. But nonetheless, it was amazing to have that happen to me the day before I started my weather career at Western.
That happened to my mother. She was washing dishes in the sink, and there was an air conditioning over the sink. And it came through the air conditioner, hit her in the elbow.
Oh my God.
I was standing right there, and it blew a hole in the shirt she was wearing.
Oh.
Right in her elbow.
Yep.
Nuts.
And she didn't want to do dishes from that point on, right?
Yeah, she was like, Charlie, take over.
She washed them really fast after that point.
Yeah.
when there's a lightning storm, I've always wondered about this. Can you take a shower or should you not get in the shower?
Well, I mean, you want to stay away from water. Outdoor shower is probably not a good idea, but indoor showers, usually the plumbing is all grounded, so you don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
So you're okay.
All right, good.
On the phone, I've always heard like on the phone is weirdly something not to do.
That
like
happened to my dad.
Through the hard line?
Through the phone, yeah.
Yeah, really? The hard line ones are always an issue. Yes, you can.
Wow.
There have been people have been struck and hurt and killed by being on the telephone.
Killed!
Hardwire ones.
Oh, my God.
My dad got zapped in the ear.
Not cell phones. Please don't worry about your cell phone. That isn't going to happen.
My dad got zapped in the ear, and the hamster was running on the wheel on the metal cage. And the wire was touching the cage, and the hamster stopped running for a moment. he just like froze, like hurt.
It would energize him and start really fast.
His eyes are really wide.
Oh, poor little hamster.
He's okay. Rebel
he
was okay.
Super hamster.
Rebel
he
was okay.
His name is Rebel.
But for a second, that was his full name, Rebel. Yes. We just like It's like a snapshot.
Like a pause button.
My dad's like, my ear was like, the hamster! Rebel!
Can you imagine if the hamster is just like, right? The hair falling down.
The hell?
Oh my God.
You smell?
It does look very fuzzy. The hamster is very fuzzy after that, probably, right?
really wide eyes.
Bill, before we let you go, how's the weather going to be for this weekend's Bluefish tournament?
Actually, looks really, really nice. We have hot, humid weather for the whole week. It's going to be up 85 to 90, more humidity than heat, though. It's going to be uncomfortable. And then a friend comes through for Friday night, and then we'll have partly sunny day Saturday and Sunday. And temperatures will be cooler, less humid, about 75 to 80 both Saturday and Sunday. Nice weather weekend.
All right, Bill. Well, thanks for coming on. Nice to finally talk to you. Bill Jackman, he does weather for our sister station, WICC. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Chaz and AJ, Nick and Nick's Roofing, Dumbass News.
Oh, boy, it's time for Dumbass News.
99.1 PLR.
It's time for Chaz and AJ, Dumbass News.
95.9 The Fox.
Dumbass.
When you see a dumbass in the news, send it to dumbassnews@chazandajinthemorning.com. Health minister mistakenly tells citizens to do something naughty. As New Zealand extends its lockdown, their COVID-19 response minister, Chris Hipkins, said it's harder for people in dense cities to go out and do what?
Look, it is a challenge in higher density areas for people to get outside and to spread their legs when they're surrounded by other people.
Spread their legs.
Spread your legs.
Let's spell it. L-A-G-E-S.
L-A-I-G-E-S.
Spread their legs.
Spread your legs.
Spread their legs.
Spread their legs.
People are going out to spread their legs.
Right.
When they're...
You mean stretch their legs?
Spread their legs.
Spread their legs.
Right. Spreading and stretching is different.
What's on his mind, apparently.
Right.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind going outside in New Zealand.
Spread their legs when they're surrounded by other people. And so in some cases, it might be more sensible for them to drive a short distance to get to somewhere where they can be further away from other people.
Grateful. Yeah, they're going to spread your legs. Make sure you're far from other people, yes.
Well, that guy's never hearing the end of that one.
Just pick one. Yeah, everybody can smile and see him.
Spread their legs.
All right, you're the spread your legs guy.
I'm going to go out and spread my legs.
Spread their legs.
I'm going to spread my legs here, and then I'm going to drive home, and then I'm going to spread my legs there.
Well, we have saved that.
To walk over a car, you must.
You know what's funny is this guy has been an important part of this COVID-19 response.
Yes.
He's probably done all kinds of important things, leading a country through COVID-19.
Yeah.
He is the COVID-19 response minister.
He's the man.
This is going to be his most played clip.
When you Google him, this is what's going to come up. When he applies for a job 10 years from now, this is what's going to come up.
Right, right.
Spread their legs.
For a physical, I must.
Spread their legs.
Okay. Ugh.
Their legs.
I have not spread my legs for a physical. That was not me.
That was a chair.
That was my leg spreading.
Spread their legs.
Oh, you need oil.
Yeah, no, it's the bend over.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, put your
hands on this deal over here.
Go to the car. No, sorry. What kind of a bust is this?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, there's that.
Yes.
More rubbing as you spread your legs.
Oh,
that's me getting a prostate exam here on the air.
Yep.
I thought it was a donkey.
You know, it's funny.
That's in. Oh, my God. Jesus.
Did that really happen?
Yeah. No.
Jesus.
Of course it happened.
Jesus.
I feel like
I have to poop.
You do get
By
that
the
feeling.
By the way, that's the first thing that happens when a doctor puts his fingers up there.
That's a doctor now. Looking at his finger.
And Dr. Rao has relatively small fingers.
He's a slight man.
Really? It felt like a yardstick to me.
Yeah, no.
Jesus.
That's the thing. Even a small finger feels different.
Yes.
Jesus!
Anything more alien than toilet paper feels different.
I was
different.
About to say it was a more rubber chicken performances, and then it does sound like one.
Yes.
Ah! Ah!
Something dumb like the donkey.
Like, no way!
It's a duet.
Next in, oh my God, Jesus!
That was a medical procedure, by the way.
Yes, it was.
As a public service.
Actually, it was just Tuesday.
That was a public service.
I feel like I have to poop.
Not kind of heavy there.
Yep. Now that would be a good engagement photo.
That would be great.
Oh, boy. Wayne Carini, chasing classic cars, owner of F40 Motorsports in Portland, Connecticut.
Yes,
which I love every time I drive through.
Oh,
it's
I stop in.
Such a neat little American town.
Oh, I just go in.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you
guys?
Brother? Good. Thank you. So you were out at this Bonneville thing. What is that?
Bonneville Salt Flats, Speed Week. So I own a Bonneville car that's gone 246 in the past.
246 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, great feeling.
Yeah. It's a 32 Ford. It's got 1,250 horsepower, intercooled, blown, 302 Chevy aluminum block engine. And so anyways, I set the sights to go to Bonneville. Took a good friend of mine, Bill Warner, who runs the Amelia Island Concours, and he and I went out there with our whole team from actually Wallingford, Steve Van Blocken and a bunch of the guys over there. We got to thank them for doing such a great job getting the car out there. But, you know, Bonneville is a special place. It's like being on Earth for the first time before there's any cities or anything, because you're out there and you can see the curvature of the Earth. There's nothing blocking it.
Wow.
It's an unbelievable sight.
That's amazing.
Pure white sand and salt. And the salt was really good this year, nice and hard-packed, perfect for racing. We got the car out there. We got everybody dialed in, ready to go. And first run, first, second, third gear, my friend Bill was driving and went to go into fourth, and it locked up.
Oh.
So, unfortunately, it's a Jericho transmission. No parts were with us because the transmission has never been a problem, but this time it seemed to be a problem. So we had to pack it up and try for next year. That's racing.
That is about as close as you're going to get to being a NASA astronaut or a fighter pilot.
Right.
It is so dangerous, and you know, one little thing goes wrong and there's nothing you could do.
Well, some of those called like fuselages, just, you know, missing wings.
It's almost with the salt, it's almost like driving on an ice rink or a pond, because anything happens, a crosswind blows you and you can just go spinning around. The tires are slicks. You're talking about, you know, salt that's very, very granular. So it's quite a feat to do that. And people line up. I mean, there was, I think, over 400 entrants this year.
Wow.
So, but one of the best entrants was my friend George Poteet. George is the fastest piston-driven car in the world. He's done 486 miles an hour, and he was shooting for 500 this year.
Hold on. Let's just take this in for a second. 486 miles an hour.
Right.
In a car.
That's Route 8 when no one's around.
So what you got to do is you have to go on your first run and you get your time. And then if it's a record, then you have to back it up the next day. So your car goes into tech. They inspect the car to make sure there was nothing that you did to it that was illegal for that class. And then,
you know, it's funny.
Next day
who cares what you did to it if you could achieve that speed?
Right,
it's like, great.
Five.
Show us what you did because I want to do it.
Right.
But anyway, yeah.
So they inspect your car.
It's pretty cool.
They inspect the car,
cool.
And then you got to do it a second day.
You got to do it a second run, and you have to either go that fast or exceed that speed. And George has done it at 486. He was shooting for 500 this year, and he had a little fire in the engine compartment at 338 miles an hour.
Oh,
and
that's
so
a moment.
He had to shut it down. pull the chute, and it put the fire out. But he was back at it still during the week. So it's 7 days of just going for the top speed that you can do, and it's pretty interesting, pretty exciting stuff. So we'll be back next year. We'll do it again. We'll rebuild the transmission, and we'll go out to Bonneville. Bonneville's a great place. Everybody should at least go out there once and see what it's like.
Oh, I'd love to.
486 miles an hour. This is not that run, but we have a run.
That's right.
As close as you're going to get to an airplane.
Yep. It sounds a little bit like that. In order for us to get going, we have push trucks, and they push you along until you get to about 45 or 50 miles an hour because the gearing is so high that you can't just take off the line.
That is unbelievable.
You just sit there and spin them, right?
Right.
Yeah, well, and then you know, you got to feather the throttle and get it going, there's 8 miles of the course, and usually by the five-mile marker, you want to shut it down. You want to pull your chute, and you want to make sure that you got enough time to slow down too. But you got to figure at 500 miles an hour, it takes a little bit of time to get there, but it takes a lot longer to slow down too.
If your chute didn't work, do you have enough room to just coast it out?
Well, no, not really. I mean, there's brakes on these things, but the brakes aren't going to hold you back. Craig Breedlove years ago, he lost his chute, and he went into a wetland, actually, at the very end of the track, and he came out okay. But there's all sorts of accidents that can happen. We had on the Saturday that we were running, we had three guys helicoptered out. So two guys fell off their motorcycles, and one guy lost his suspension and flipped the car over three times.
Oh my God!
That's how he lost Jesse Combs. Anything can happen. Right? Yeah.
Wayne Carini's on. What's that, AJ?
That's how he lost Jesse Combs 2 years ago. Didn't she? She was going for a record. Yes. And she wiped out.
Oh, right.
Yeah. She was running in California though, not at Bonneville, I don't think.
Gotcha.
But it's a dangerous sport. There's no doubt about it.
Wow.
But it's, that's what we all take risks in life, and it sure gets the adrenaline pumping.
I was going to say, once you have that adrenaline rush, that must be very addictive.
Well, it's addictive. The salt's addictive, they say, and it draws you back every year. We fail this year, but we're not giving up.
So that's salt flat, Wayne. Like, if you're out there with a sandwich and you want some salt, can you just scrape some off the ground?
Well, it's not the same type of salt, that's for sure. We brought some home in a baggie, though. So that's neat. So at least we could keep it in the car while we're working on it this year to give us that incentive to get our butts in gear and get the car done.
The cop be like, what's that in the car? It's salt.
It's salt. Yeah, sure it is.
Yeah, let me taste that, pal. Yeah. It's just salt.
Wayne Carini, Chasing Classic Cars on Motor Trend TV on the show right now. GM's recalling another 70,000 Chevy Bolt electric cars.
Yeah. Yeah, things in the electric car field are, it's touch and go. I mean, this is things that we need to finalize a lot of things before we really get going on electric cars. But, I talked to all my friends in the business and that are out in Detroit. Matter of fact, I was just in Detroit this past weekend at the Woodward Dream Cruise down Woodward Avenue, and I saw a lot of my friends in the car business. And electric cars are the future. That's what they're telling me.
Yeah, no doubt.
Piston-driven, high-performance cars are going to be a thing of the past. So everybody that's got a high-performance car, hang on to it because there's not going to be too many made.
Seems like batteries, a battery company would be a good company to invest in now,
I would think.
Well, my big concern is that where all the special metals come from, you know, the metals to make these batteries are they come from China, they come from Russia, they come from all these countries that we don't have really great alliances with. And well, what's going to happen all of a sudden if they build all these cars and all of a sudden they go, well, you know what, I'm sorry, you're not going to get those batteries now.
Right.
You're not going to get those metals that you need to make those batteries. Like, there's a lot of things to think about. The recharging of the batteries. You know, we were talking the other day, a friend of mine skis a lot out in Colorado and has been caught many, many times in, with an avalanche going across the road where the road is closed for hours. What's going to happen if you only have, you know, a third of a charge in your car and all of a sudden now you're sitting on the side of the road for 5 or 6 hours and draining the batteries?
Yeah, no heat. Yep.
No heat in the car or anything. So there's a lot of things to think about. And my feeling is that the hybrid is really the best way to go. Where you have gasoline power as well as battery power.
Right.
That's the way to go.
The car market is still insane, right? Maybe not as insane as 4 months ago, but still crazy, right?
We had our best year at F40 as far as sales go. You know, people were sitting at home with nothing to do, and they knew that a car was the best way to get out and see the world and be part of society again. But now the big problem is the car manufacturers, they can't get these chips.
Is that still
Mercedes
a problem?
Just absolutely, it's a huge problem.
Oh, wow.
There's thousands, hundreds of thousands of cars sitting idle that have already been manufactured waiting for the chips to come in to complete the car.
How do they do that, Wayne, if it's a 2000, let's just say 20 or 2021, and they don't get the chip to 2022, they still sell it as a 2021?
That's a good question. I really don't know. Yeah. I really don't know. I think that they're going to have to, they're going to take a beating, that's for sure. But they're not manufacturing cars. Toyota just laid off people for 3 weeks. Ford, the same thing. They just shut the plants down. They have a backlog of cars, and they don't have the parts to be able to make the cars for the future. And the dealers' lots are empty. I know a friend of mine was supposed to get 180 cars. The other day got 6.
Whoops.
And then Mercedes yesterday finally decided to let their cars go because the chip they need just runs the navigation system and the stereo system and these things. And they're saying, you can pick your car up, and when the chips come in, we'll just install the chip, and then you have all your you know, your backup cameras and all that kind of stuff.
That seems smart.
Right. Just MapQuest your directions.
at least get that stuff out. But... You know, that's new cars. What's happening today at F40 is kind of exciting. The film crew just arrived, and the Inner City Truck's here with one of the most famous custom cars in the world. And I'm going to have the opportunity to sell that car. It's the Bob Hirahata.
Wayne Carini, Chasing Classic Cars on Motor Trend TV on the show right now. We love that he's a hometown boy. He owns F40 Motorsports in Portland. And can I tell you why I think this show has been so successful for so long and is still just as good, if not better now than it was when it started? It's a show about the story of the car.
Yeah.
And it's not let's have people arguing and throwing wrenches.
Right.
It's just a beautiful tribute to cars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The chase, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, what we do every day, and there's no contrived things, there's no scripts, there's nothing. It's just what happens, and cars are so interesting because the stories behind them are interesting, and there's the key to the whole thing. The car could be interesting on its own, but it's the history of the car that's the real important thing.
And what do you have coming, you said something special happening at F40 today?
Yeah, so we're filming this morning here in just a few minutes, as soon as I get off the air with you guys. We have the Bob Hirahata Mercury. It's a 1951 Mercury. The Bob Hirahata from Los Angeles, when he was just a teenager in his late teens, bought a brand new 51 Mercury and took it to George Barris. Barris Customs, world's most famous custom car shop.
That's the guy who made the Batmobile?
Monster Coach. Yep.
Everything that has to do with Hollywood, George was part of. But their start was customizing cars, and this was after people got back from the war, these were all things everybody wanted, a cool car. They wanted to be something different. Bob had parents owned an insurance agency, and he had a little bit more money than probably a lot of other kids at that time. He went out and bought a 51 Mercury brand new, brought it over to George and Sam Barris and said, do your thing, whatever you want to do. And to this day, that car has tried to been copied so many times, but nobody can get the lines and the chop and the look that this car has. It's that special. They built it in 9 months, took it across the country to every car show and won first place, best in show awards throughout the country at every Autorama, Motorama, all these big events.
I'm looking at it right now. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a two-tone green, a light and dark green. And then it was sold and was on a used car lot in Los Angeles in 1959, painted a different color, sort of looking shabby. And Jim McNeil from L.A. Bought it for $500.
Oh, man.
And,
oh,
wow. Took it home and put it in his garage and never could afford to do anything with it. And in 2013, they restored the car so it would appear at Pebble Beach in a special class that they were having for custom cars. And in 2015, it won the award of the first in class at Pebble Beach. At that time, Jim asked me to sit in the car with him. And he says, I just want to tell you something. You're in my will. I said, what do you mean, Jim? I never met the man before that day. And he said, well, I watch you on TV, and I like the way you handle selling people's cars. You're in my will as the who to contact, my family to contact, if and when I die, to help them sell the car. Wow. Unfortunately, Jim passed away in October, and the family called me, and the car's here. We're going to get it all fixed up. It's been in the Peterson Automobile Museum in L.A., and it was just unveiled 2 weeks ago at the Mecum auction in Monterey, is being a car that's coming up for sale at the Kissimmee auction in January.
Nice.
So we're going to be doing a big story about it for the TV show. We're going to do a lot of promotion, and hopefully this car will be similar to the Bullitt car where it sells for a lot of money.
What's a lot of money?
We're hoping for anywhere from $2 to $3 million.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. He was not lying there.
Oh my God.
This is it. This is the number one custom made car made by the best custom shop in the world, the Barris Brothers. And it's never been sold other than in 1959. It's been in the same family. So just what we were talking about before, the history of the car, the family, everything about it is so special. And it is a very special car in itself. So we're very excited about it.
It looks like it started off the whole lead sled revolution, right?
I was going to say, was this the beginning of the chop roof and
the lead sleds? Yeah.
This is it. You know, when they were doing chops, I mean, this is the utmost chop car in the world by far. And everybody recognizes it that too. So it's been tried to be copied so many times, but nobody can get the look that this car has.
Wow.
It's got a great stance too. I love it.
That is.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
So, we're very excited about it. We're taking it off the truck here in just a few minutes.
Really? It's outside right now. So if you're driving.
It is.
Down Route 66.
It's in the inner city truck. Yep, it's in the inner city truck over here.
I'll be right there. Just give me a half an hour. I'll be right there.
Oh, man.
We'll put some pictures on our Facebook site and our Instagram later on today. And also my new site, that's WayneCarini.tv. Where you can buy some merchandise, and then we have an Instagram site there and a Facebook site there. So we'll post some pictures today. Everybody can see what it looks like.
Awesome.
So when you're filming at F40 in Portland, do people drive by and they see you and they beep their horn And then it's like, now we got to retake it.
No, we don't retake it. We just move forward.
Good.
You know, probably this morning as we unload it, there'll be cars pulling in to look at it, too. Right. I mean, sometimes that's what happens, especially with an iconic car like that.
And that becomes part of the show.
I only did it 10 times.
Sure.
There's a smudge of AJ's face on the glass door.
Forehead.
I always arrive unannounced. I'm like, I'm here.
Like the kid at the ice cream parlor.
Car lover.
Yeah. No, he's a great ambassador for classic cars in Connecticut.
He is. Absolutely. We love having him at shows. AJ and I actually at the Berlin Fairgrounds this year, we rode around the golf cart and picked our choices out that day for our awards. So it's always great to hang out with AJ at car shows.
AJ did the Dream Cruise over the weekend.
Yeah. The Dream Ride Experience. Yeah. That was a great event.
Unfortunately, I was out in Detroit at the Woodward Cruise and couldn't make it. And then I came home actually to be home. I was home late Saturday so I could go on Sunday morning to the Dream Ride or Dream Car Show, actually. And then, of course, the storm came through and they had to cancel it.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yeah, they put the kibosh on that one. Well, it was a great day, but, a lot of people. So
it was great. You know, when Michael Bizzuto and the whole crew do for Special Olympics, it's just unbelievable. You know, it has a special place in my heart because my daughter was a Special Olympian when she was just a young child. So I always make sure that I support anything to do with Special Olympics.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Wayne, thanks for coming on. And I'm looking forward to seeing this episode with this car.
He's running through the car right now. I would be.
Wayne Carini, owner of F40 Motorsports in Portland and host of Chasing Classic Cars. Both those things merge today.
Yep. Yes.
As soon as he hangs up the phone. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. So he was on stage at Central Park with Barry Manilow when the plug got pulled.
Aha.
Our old buddy, Joey Malotti, keyboardist and vocalist for Barry Manilow. Long time no talk, brother. Good morning.
Good morning, Chaz. AJ, how you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for waking up in the middle of the night where you are to talk to us.
I just don't go to bed.
Yeah, good.
That's the true musician, yes.
Yes.
It's all good, man.
Far into the set? Every group was just playing two songs, right?
Yes.
And you guys were in the middle of like a medley.
Yeah, we had like a 7-plus-minute medley planned to go off, and we got, into maybe the third or fourth song of it. So we were maybe 3 minutes in, if that much.
And what did it sound like to you when it was happening, and what did you think it was?
Well, so we're on stage, right? And, you know, you look out there, and it's just one big rush. I mean, seeing all those people, and so you're really... It's just pumped up, you know, and, you know, we kick it off and like, I can't hear my keyboards. So my mix is like horrible for starters. So I'm like, okay, just go with it, you know? And then I see, so then it's off the ground. It's really tight. It's happening. He's pumped up. He looks great. You know, everything looks great. The horn section behind me. And, all of a sudden, I see this guy come. One of the organizers. You know, there's a monitor guy, and then there was the stage manager, and I think it was the stage manager come out. And I'm trying to flag him down to get my mix up right, and he's going over to Barry, and he's telling him, you know, basically. And Barry keeps singing. You know, it's like then the announcement. You see the sign go up. You know, and right before that, there was some lightning that tripped off, and then you hear. Everybody, please clear the park for your safety. This isn't an emergency situation, but we need to clear you out of here for your safety, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, sign goes up on the thing, and the PA, you know, just goes off. So we're not out there. We're not being pumped out anymore. And then it all sinks in, you know. What the hell? We're done. You know, it's like, right. Oh, my God, you know.
That was quick.
So it was an experience, I got to say. You know, I mean, I've never been in that situation before where the plug got pulled and you got the hell off stage, you know. You know, I've been in rainy situations. I think one of the gigs we did, I think it was like Placerpog in Connecticut. I've been like two or three situations with Barry where it's been pouring rain, you know, and you know, we still went on with the show. But so that was my experience, guys.
Did you know that it was weather related when they started talking over the PA?
I didn't. I didn't know exactly, you know, because I didn't really hear the announcement, because we have, you know, we got our inner ears and we have our mix pump, you know, the whole mix of the band pump pretty loud. So I didn't really catch it. Well, you know, then we found out. And
but
then
you,
we
so
were,
at the very first second that you know that you're being stopped and the park is being evacuated, Central Park, right. Did you think it could be terrorists? It could be worse, active shooters, something of that nature?
You know, a lot of things went through my mind. As a matter of fact, I mean, even before we did the gig, I was like saying my prayers, like, please don't let this be, don't let this turn into 9/11. You know, I was there for 9/11. You know, we just finished the Jackson show and woke up to that mess in
New
York.
What was that, Michael Jackson?
Yeah, his 30th anniversary special we did at Madison Square Garden. I was co-musical director with Greg Fellengans. He handled Michael's band. I handled the rest of the orchestra. I had an arrangement team. I did some arrangements myself. And I conducted the whole first half of that show, you know, with Whitney and Luther Vandross. And, you know, that whole, we had, you know, James Ingram. A lot of these people aren't with us anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but I was praying, like, please, let this be peaceful. Let's let this show go off. And I knew the weather was messed up. I mean, we knew a storm was coming. Part of me was saying, like, well, gee, why don't they, you know, maybe they should move this, like, a couple of days. I mean, it's such a big production, you know, with the stage, with, you know, it was huge. Tents all over the place. But, you know, they kept the show going, and unfortunately, the mayor was like chomping at the bit. He didn't want it to go down. He was like, you know, I mean, but it was so messy. I mean, after that, it just got worse and worse, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that wasn't even, it really wasn't even Henry, you know, or Henri, the hurricane. It was more, it was a storm before that.
Yep.
I mean, basically a thunder and lightning storm, you know, I'd call it a storm, but, you know. I mean, we're used to that stuff in Connecticut, right? You know, that shit happens all the time.
Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
does.
I got to hit the dump button on you. Being a naughty boy here.
You're Joey Malotti, too long, right?
Joey Malotti, keyboardist and vocalist for Barry Manilow, was at the Central Park show that got the plug was pulled. He was on the stage when the plug was pulled. And the Michael Jackson show, that was September 10th, right? And then the day after was
the... Exactly. 9/7 and 9/10. Yeah, we did two shows that weekend. Got off stage after the second one, which just exhilarated. You know, it's just, it was such a great, you know, it was, what a great experience.
I
was
20 years ago. Yeah.
I'm telling you, you know, and so, but it got messy after the show, you know, and we got escorted back to our tent. We all had tents and all the acts had their names on, you know, the outside. So we were inside and it was pouring, you know, and then it started leaking and then the floors started getting wet and they're like, got us in, they have us in this holding pattern, you know, because we didn't know if we were going to go back. Maybe it was going to clear. So Barry was ultra cool. I mean, he was just, I'll do anything, whatever they want me to do, I'm good. And he was just a total pro, you know. And then they actually called, CNN actually called him, and he had a conversation. I forget the guy's name, but
Anderson and, Cooper.
Thank you, Anderson Cooper. And yeah, so they had a great conversation, and I mean, Anderson was like just loving it, you know. And so, like, Barry was like, "Wow, we can't buy this kind of publicity, right?"
No, not at all.
Anderson is out, and he's gay. And if you're talking to Barry Manilow, and you're a gay man, I mean, that's a treat. Don't?
Well, there you go. There's a connection.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a gay man talking to Cher. It's like, this is
an icon.
I could do this all day.
Oh, an icon, God. Yes.
I want to talk to Cher.
I want to talk to Cher.
She's so great.
Were you guys watching the show?
What was I doing? Saturday night. Oh, it was my anniversary. I was out for dinner, but I was going to watch
nice.
It. Yeah.
happy belated anniversary.
Thank you. So we talked to David Brown with Rolling Stone magazine, and he was in the audience, and he said it was nothing but confusing.
Yep.
Because the announcement started with "Please leave for your safety, leave quietly, calmly," and they didn't say "due to weather."
Yeah, so just led with that.
He was confused as to what's happening right now.
That would help.
And then there was confusion as to, is this happening again? Is it not happening again?
Are we coming back in?
The mayor was saying we're coming back, and then but the cops are saying, "Oh no, you're not coming back. Get out."
Right.
Sounds like you had that going on backstage as well.
Yeah, you know, they could have clarified that. I think that would have probably made people feel a lot more at ease.
Yeah.
But it makes you wonder if they did that on purpose, because they said due to weather, some folks were like, ah, it's just weather. I'm just going to hang out here. By saying it that way, it made everybody like wonder what's going on and get the hell out.
Yeah, but you create a stampede if people think there could be an active shooter or whatever.
Right.
But you know what's funny? We're talking about this because it was so well organized, and you guys were pretty much on schedule. And when you think about the amount of bands that that concert ran through with the rotating stage, it was pretty well run.
Yeah.
But no one had discussed clearly the possibility that there could be a storm and how to handle it.
Right.
That one was like, ooh, we don't know what to do now.
Right. What do we do? What do we do now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the risers and the bands and the way that all the stagehands and the techs handled everything was amazing. I mean, everything was like clockwork, and I was really impressed by that. You know, and it was great seeing the other acts. I mean, I didn't get a chance to talk to many of them because you went on, you got escorted out, and then there was security. I saw Jonathan Cain. We had done, and I was with Michael Bolton. We had crossed their paths a bunch of times, and plus Michael's drummer, Muggs Cain, is Jonathan's brother. So we had talked many, many times. We're good friends, and I did get to say hi to him as he walked off stage.
Crazy. Yeah, and you have another memory of playing in New York where things just got really strange.
Went awry, so, yes.
Yeah, that's two times. So,
yep. Well, third's a charm.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Please.
Well, Joey, so great to hear your voice. Thank you so much for waking up, and we really appreciate you.
Now go to sleep.
Oh, guys, man. Always a pleasure. Call anytime. We're around.
Okay.
Don't tell us that.
we got our residency coming back with Barry coming, this September. We start the 16th. We're going to rehearsals on the 7th to prepare for that. So if you guys are out in Vegas, you got my number.
Well, I now have two major entertainers who invited me there to just see Vegas. So I think I'm going this time. So.
Okay. Let's
I'm going to take you up on it, Joey.
Right.
You got it.
All right. Thank you. Joey Melotti, keyboardist, vocalist, Barry Manilow, and for so many others in music.
Yes.
We're linked up to his Facebook and website.